Good morning, Hillcrest. How are we doing? Good. Well, let's see. Jessie Copeland, she's a kind of our elder focus this week. She had a slide up there. And when I came to Hillcrest a couple of years ago, she was a middle schooler. And the first time I saw Jessie was actually on a VCR tape that the youth group had sent me when I was still living in California, welcoming me to come to Hillcrest. And for what I knew of Jessie right off the bat, she always had a heart for service. Even then, I saw it. It was not just something she did. It was strong in her. And there had plenty of kids in those days, if you would have said, hey, in the future, first of all, Doug, you're going to be here a few more years, and this kid in middle school is going to be one of your elders, I would laugh at most of those opportunities. But Jessie certainly would be one of them that I would have said early on, yeah, I could see that. Definitely someone who gets it in this area of serving. And as part of what we're talking about today, we're in our third week of this series called Kaleo, which is the Greek word for called. And so we are called to different things. First week, we talked about how we are called to care. And with care, we talked about this word compassion, and that compassion can't exist without action. In other words, if you're going to be compassionate about something, you have to do something for it to be compassion. Otherwise, it's just, you know, our thoughts and prayers. But compassion is action. And last week, we talked about generosity, that we're called to be generous. We're called to give. And, you know, that was a challenging message, I think, for a lot of us, but one that was very important for us to be able to hear and understand what God's call is for us as followers of Jesus Christ. So today we want to talk about that we are called to serve. And when I say serve, and a church is going to talk about serving, a lot of times we think, well, we talk about serving because the church has things that it needs to do, and it needs people to do those things. And so the pastor is going to beat us over the head to do something, to get involved, to give of our time and resources somehow. So with that probably being a thought that some might have, let me tell you this as we start. I'm not asking you to sign up for anything. I'm not asking you to do anything. We don't have the normal rule that seems to be in churches where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. We've got a lot of great servers around here. But serving isn't just here. Serving is in a lot of other areas as well. And Jessie talked about some of those in her video. But serving is something that we're called to do. It's a way that we live our lives as Christians. And I want to get into this a little bit more to talk about the specifics of this. But Jesus is the one that gave us the call to say that we are to be people of serving. And when Jesus gave this call, he did it through an example. The example you're going to find just prior to the Last Supper. This is the last Passover Jesus is going to have with his disciples before his arrest and his crucifixion. So as his disciples are coming in, Jesus is already there in the room, and he starts to wash the disciples' feet. And so in John chapter 13, verses 12 through 14, it says this: after washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, "Do you understand what I was doing? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, because that is what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet." Now, as the disciples heard this, they responded differently. Jesus was washing the disciples' feet because, anyone know why? Because their feet were dirty. Like, it just wasn't rocket science. Now, I get it. In our culture, we're like, don't touch my feet. You know, I don't want to. In fact, if you invite me over and say, when you come over, I'm going to wash your feet, I'm going to be like, I don't know what day you're inviting me over, but I got something going on that day. I'll figure out what it is. Yeah, it's uncomfortable. We don't like that. And it's not a part of our culture. And if you think that what Jesus is saying here is to wash each other's feet, you've got it wrong. But Jesus is also saying very clearly, wash each other's feet. In Jesus' day, you got around town and from city to city and country to country on your feet. You know, nobody had like hybrid cars back then. Like, you walked. Maybe you had a donkey, but trust me, what was coming up from the ground from that isn't good either. So when you showed up in someone's home, some people were barefoot, some people had sandals, but your feet were uncovered. And you had the dirt and dust from the road as well as camel poo. on your feet. So when you walked in, what do we do in our culture? You walk into someone's house and generally you take off your shoes, right? They can't take off their feet. So when they would show up, there'd be really about three ways this would happen. There'd be a basin there that would be for you to use for yourself to get your feet clean so you can enter someone's house. If it was a well-to-do family, they may have a servant or someone that would do that for you and wash your feet. Sometimes the host, whoever invited you over to the house, they would do the foot washing. And it was symbolic. It was a way to show care to one another, that sort of thing. So this was totally normal. Washing your feet was just regular day stuff. They did it many times a day if they were entering homes or whatever it might be, even their own home. Old Hebrew moms from way back, the kids would run in and mom would yell, "Did you wash your feet?" Okay. But they'd say it in Hebrew, and I don't know what that word is. So Peter, very type A, zealous kind of disciple, he decides this is symbolic. Because, see, washing feet was just standard. So Jesus is saying, "I wash your feet. You need to wash each other's feet." And Peter goes, "Well, first of all," Peter says, "don't wash my feet." And Jesus says, "Look, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part with me." So Peter goes, "Ah, I get it. Wash all of me. Scrub-a-dub-dub, Jesus. I mean, if the feet's good, let's just scrub the whole body." And then what does Jesus say to Peter? I'll paraphrase. "You're dumb." He said, "It's your feet that's dirty, Peter." In other words, Jesus is saying, like, for real, man, I'm washing your feet because your feet are dirty. That's why I'm washing your feet. So Jesus says, this is the example I'm giving you. I need you to do this for others. So Jesus says, "You call me teacher, you call me Lord. I have this high position with you, but I'm washing your feet, and I'm washing them because they need washing." Doesn't matter what your position is, but serving is doing something for someone else that needs being done. Sometimes the service that we might do is something that someone is capable to do for themselves, but we do it for them. Other times, service that we do for someone is doing something that they can't do for themselves. But no matter what, service is doing something for someone like this. And Peter, he caught on. He got this. Later on in life, as his ministry went on, as he understood more about what Jesus was about, and as he was doing his own teaching, he wrote these words in 1 Peter 4:10. He said, "God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another." So he got it. This is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to serve one another. Now, when I say that we're to serve one another, I want you to understand the context of serve in the context of Christianity. When we serve one another, when we serve the way God wants us to serve, that is a sacrifice. Sacrifice requires a service element. Would you agree? You can't truly sacrifice if you're not serving in some way. That's key. And then if we push that a little further, we all have to understand also that love cannot be love without sacrifice being a part of love. What makes love love is sacrifice. Now, there's varying degrees of sacrifice and maybe varying degrees or depth of love. The depth of love is connected to the depth of sacrifice. Parents, can you relate to this with your kids? Anyone that you've loved, there's sacrifice to it. Sacrifice can't exist without service. Service, sacrifice, love. These things are all interconnected. And that's why when Jesus is talking about service, he's putting it at a pinnacle because it's a foundational piece of our Christian belief, our Christian understanding, and our Christian living that everything is built upon is our ability to serve one another. Because without service, you can't even have love. You have to be able to serve for the big picture to play out, which is why Jesus said these words in Matthew chapter 20, verse 28. He said, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others," and notice the sacrificial piece that he's pointing to here, "and to give his life as a ransom for many." That his service was going to end in the greatest sacrifice, which is his display of love. God is love. So you need to have service. found in sacrifice, and sacrifice found in love. Serving is so key and so integral to our Christian faith, they are inseparable. Service, sacrifice, and love. So if you're following along and you want to do your fill-in today, your fill-in I'll put at the bottom of the screen here on page 6 of your program. A Christian who does not serve is not a Christian. You can gasp. Go ahead. And that's a rather incendiary comment to make. And I'm not judging. I'm saying from what Scripture says, what Jesus teaches us, is that if you don't serve, how can Christ be in you? Because it's the foundation of who we are and how we relate. We're told, when you boil the whole Bible down, it's to love who? Love God and others. Can that happen without service? Serving others and serving God. It's not possible. I don't know how you're a Christian if you don't serve. It seems like you're missing the core of the definition, the DNA of what being a Christ follower is, from the example that Jesus gave and the teachings that he gave on this as well. Now, when we're going to define serving, kind of get a better handle on what serving is, obviously serving is something that is something that we do for someone else. Like I said, something that they can do for themselves, but we do it, or something they can't do for themselves, and we'll step in and help out, but it's doing something for someone else. In Philippians 2:4, it says, don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others too. As people, we are wired, and this is not a negative, okay? I mean, it can become a negative, but it's not a negative. As people, we are hardwired for self-love, okay? Taking care of ourselves, making sure our needs are met, making sure that if happiness is attainable, that we search it out, making sure that if comfort is available, we find it, to make sure that food is available that we need, that we're able to get it. Self-love is okay, so much so that God tells us that we need to love others. If we want to know how to love others as you what? As you love yourself. So self-love, it's okay, but when it gets out of proportion and when self-love keeps us from loving other people, we call that selfishness. Okay, when our self-love becomes so great that we have no room to love someone else. So that's where the problem falls in. But just because, you know, you're taking care of yourself and you're meeting your needs and paying attention to those needs is not a bad thing. But it is if taking care of those things means you have no room to take care of anyone else's needs. So this idea of don't look out for just your own interests, but the interests of others too. Now, this is kind of a soft pedal way of talking about this, and maybe you're more like me and you need the Bible to be a little bit more direct. Well, you'll find that in 1 John 3:17. Same thing, just said kind of in the way Doug needs to hear it. If someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? If you're unwilling to serve someone, you tell me how love can possibly be in you, because love is defined through that service. And so if you say you love and you have no service, I would go back to my original statement and say a Christian who does not serve is not a Christian. Challenging. If we're unwilling to serve, that means we are unwilling to sacrifice. And if we are unwilling to sacrifice, we are unwilling to love. Love is giving of yourself for the sake of someone else. To illustrate this idea, I want to talk to you about a young guy named David. Here's a picture of him. You recognize him, right? He's right downtown. He's not always dressed appropriately. So we did have to put clothes on him. I don't know why he has the go-go boots on. But it's better than the alternative, trust me. You might know David from the famous story of David and Goliath. But I want to talk to you about the David prior to this event. The David that happened beforehand and the heart, attitude, and life of service that he showed prior to being the big man on campus. I'm talking about the kid. Because there's some things that I think we can point out in his life that are very powerful on how we can learn about service as it relates to the choices that David made along the way. Now, David was born during the time when Israel was led by judges. And so some of the famous judges that you might remember. Anybody want to call any out? Know any of the judges? Deborah, yeah. Gideon, I hear Gideon out there. The final judge, the very last judge. Anyone know the last judge of Israel? Thank you. Yes, Samuel. Very good. Man, Aaron's like a walking Bible dictionary over there. But, oh, you're hearing it from behind you? All right. Well, at least you're the mouthpiece. That's like me. I just read this stuff during the week, and I just regurgitate like I know all this, right? So Samuel is the last judge of Israel. So after the judges came the era of the kings. That's right. Now, Samuel being the last judge, he was really down on the whole king thing because he said the people were crying out for a king because other nations had kings. They wanted a king. And Samuel says, this is going to be a bad deal. Like, God is our king. Like, he should be our king. He's the one that we should be listening to. And the people are like, we want a king. So God said, that's all right, Samuel. We'll give him a king. So he anoints a king, and this king's name is Saul, okay? First king. Now, David is growing up in this time between the judges and the kings, like right in this time frame. And David is the eighth youngest son to a man named Jesse. And Jesse falls in the lineage of, in fact, his great-grandparents. Anyone know who Jesse's great-grandparents were? Ruth and Boaz. That's right. You remember that story? We talked about that a few months back. But yeah, so he's the great-grandson. And so now David is born in this family, eighth son. Now, being eighth in line, lineage and order of birth was really important in David's day. So he's eighth and there's not a ninth. Okay? So what job does he get? He gets the shepherding job. And I know that in the Christian community, we talk about Jesus is a shepherd. He's our shepherd. We talk about shepherds. And it seems like, yeah, that's kind of a cool thing to do. It was the lowliest, dumbest work. It didn't take a lot of skills. You could start doing it at about age 4 or 5 years old. When we go to South Sudan, Jesse can contest to this, and so can Shane, and others of you that have been with me out to South Sudan. The kids that do the sheep and goats, they're like 5 or 6 years old. I mean, all day long, all I have to do is just make sure they don't run off. And if they do, they have to kind of alert themselves, and they go get it and hit it with a stick, and it goes back into, that's it. All day, all night. So we're not talking really tough job. Now, true, every once in a while, an animal wants to attack, and you try to defend, but, I mean, I look at these little kids, like, if something's coming through, they're just going to be like, whatever, like. Now, David apparently was pretty good with a slingshot because of this, because he did have to fend off these sheep, and he learned how to do that. Apparently, also, he was pretty good playing a harp, probably because of all the hours of nothing to do out shepherding as he would, day and night. So he learned to play a harp. He was pretty good at that. It's kind of like, you know, as if modern day might be like an acoustic guitar and he could just kind of, you know, play and did pretty well with that. So this is the David that is in the early part of the story and what we first begin to know about David. So God tells Samuel, all right, we're going to anoint a king. And so they anoint Saul, and Saul is like a good-looking guy, tall guy, kind of a kingly stature is what Saul had. But Saul starts right off the bat being a bad king, which is the whole thing with kings, but the people were getting what they deserved with it. But God said, look, I've had it with Saul. Like, I'm done with Saul. So he tells Samuel, he said, I'm done with Saul, and so we're going to replace him. And what I want you to do is I want you to anoint a new king. So the king that you're going to anoint is going to come from Jesse's sons. And when you go see Jesse and you see his sons, I'll tell you which one is going to be the king when you get there. And what does Samuel say? He doesn't just say, that's an awesome idea, because, yeah, Saul is the worst. This is what Samuel says. He says, I think if Saul finds out I'm doing this, I'm dead. So, no thanks. And God says, I gotcha. He said, what you'll do is you'll go to Bethlehem, where Jesse's family lives, and when you're in Bethlehem, you're going to offer a sacrifice, and you're going to invite Jesse's family to the sacrifice. Then when you see the boys, I'll let you know which one, and you'll anoint them right there. So Samuel agrees, good deal. So he goes the 11 miles from his home to Bethlehem, and he sees Jesse, he sees the boys, and the first son, obviously, that's the one who it's going to go to because he's the oldest, firstborn, that's where all the rights are, and he stands before that boy, and God tells him, not that one. Goes to number two, not that one. Goes to the third one, not that one. And Samuel is kind of starting to complain a little bit to God in this. He's like, God, like you said it was going to be Jesse's kids. And like these here, this is the cream of the crop, man. These guys look kingly. Like they have this machismo about them. And that's a Greek word, by the way, machismo. And this is what God says to him. 1 Samuel 16:7 says, but the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. God is saying, like, you're looking at the outside of these boys, but I'm telling you, I'm looking inside. And when we get to the one that it's all right in here, that's the one. And I think God sometimes also takes offense in how we think about the outside. Because he made each one of us the way we are. He designed us the way we are. And in his eyes, we are perfectly and wonderfully made. You can't change the outside. Well, I guess you can go to plastic surgery and try to change it. You're going to look freakish if you do. But God did a better job than plastic surgery can do. Nonetheless, I get it. You got things about your body you don't like. They're different than other people. But God made that. And he's super happy with how you look because you're like spot on how he designed you. The thing you do have control of is the heart. What's the heart look like? What's the condition of the heart? And so God's like, the outside, quit looking at that. Like, everybody focuses so much on the outside. He says, it's the heart that matters. You give me a good heart. You give me a man after my heart. He said, that's the one I can use. Keep going down the line. So he does. If you're following along with your fill-ins, we are responsible for the condition of our heart. So Jesse goes to son 4 and 5 and 6. And finally runs out of sons. And God has said no to every single one of them. And so Samuel's very confused at this point because he's gone through all the sons. God said he would anoint one of these sons, but yet has said no to every one of the sons. So Samuel has to ask a question that he probably thinks is the dumbest question that's going to come out of his mouth in all of his years on this earth. You can see his dumb question in 1 Samuel 16. Starting at verse 11, then Samuel asked, are these all the sons you have? You got to hear how Samuel's asking this. Like I came a long way. I'm risking life and limbs. Saul could kill me for this. We have this little ruse of this, like, sacrificial thing. God has already admonished me because I apparently can't on my own figure out who's to anoint. But God's going to tell me I've just been through all your kids. Nobody. So I got to think. You got someone living under the stairs or something. Well, there is still the youngest, Jesse replied. I don't know, that's, you got to get the emphasis for that youngest. Well, there's still the youngest, but he's out in the fields watching sheep and goats. That's like he's out in back cleaning the outhouses. Like this is the kid, he's 8th in line. This is David. I didn't even bring him. What does Samuel say? Send for him at once, Samuel said. We will not sit down to eat until he arrives. So Jesse sent for him. He was dark and handsome, beautiful eyes. And the Lord said, this is the one. Anoint him. So as David stood there among his brothers, Samuel took the flask of olive oil that he had brought and anointed David with the oil, and the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David from that day on, and Samuel returned to Ramah. So The anointing takes place. So how does David's story unfold now? I mean, obviously he doesn't have to tend sheep anymore because now he's going to be the king over Israel. Obviously, he's going to go into like some initial training of what it's going to be like to run an entire country of God's people. He's going to have to somehow understand the politics. He's going to have to understand etiquette. He has to learn how to like put that pinky out when he drinks. I mean, he's got to figure all this stuff out, right? His brothers are obviously going to show him tremendous respect at this point because he's going to be their king. And this is what the future immediately changes for David. Not David immediately goes back to sheep and goats. His lowly position, he goes right back into. He's a shepherd, and he remains a shepherd in this position. I want to give you a couple examples of David's servitude here. I want to point out a couple of things. First of all, King Saul, when God rejected him, God kind of gave him this tormenting spirit. And there'd be times for Saul that he was so depressed and just so distressed. And when this would happen, the only thing that would make it better was music. And since he didn't own a pair of Beats and there was no music to download, you had to have like live guys play. And somebody said, hey, I know this kid. He's a shepherd, but this dude rocks on the harp. Especially the electric harp. He's amazing. So Saul sends for this kid, David, who comes into Saul's court and starts playing the harp, and Saul is immediately soothed by his playing. So Saul wants David to continue to come back because it's working. Interesting how God works those things out. In fact, in 1 Samuel 16:21, it says, so David went to Saul and began serving him. And Saul loved David very much, and David became his armor bearer. Notice, David serves Saul, the king who he is going to replace. And David knows he's going to replace Saul, and Saul is not quite yet aware of this piece of information. But David serves Saul so well and so faithfully, from his heart, genuine service, that Saul loves David. And even gives him additional responsibilities. Could you do that? Because I couldn't. Think of your boss at work, okay? Especially if you have a bad boss, okay? And your supervisor or the person in, you know, in front of your boss comes to you and says, hey, you're going to replace your boss because he's doing a terrible job. She's doing a horrible job. We're going to replace you, replace that person. It's going to take about 4 months, but until then, you're going to be their right-hand person. Could you do it in a way that that person would literally fall in love with you working for them? Where you are just lifting them up and helping them and encouraging them and being the making them shine? Could you serve that person that way, knowing you're going to replace them? I don't think I could. David did. In his servanthood, it didn't matter what his position was. It didn't matter what his position was going to be. He served where he was at. And not only did he serve where he was at, he served with what he had, which was a harp. A harp and an attitude. And the doors started to open for him that God led him to, but it was his heart condition that allowed those doors to open and for him to move through them. God can bring us to the trough, but it's up to us to drink. God can bring you to places, but if your heart is, you know, hard, cold, if your attitude isn't right, the things aren't going to happen the way God wants them to happen for you. But when your heart is in line with his, the doors start to open up. And so for David, this was key for him. Next, we see David serve his brothers. It's kind of the next piece along the way. During this period of time, Israel is now battling the Philistines. And so they're off to battle, and David's brothers are over there in battle. But not David, because he's just lowly David, so he's still shepherding. But he's given the responsibility to go back and forth from the battlefield to shepherding. He does shepherding for a while, back to the battlefield, but not to do any battling, but to bring items of food to the brothers, bread and cheese. And if I'm just going to simplify it, David is like the very first pizza delivery guy. Okay, so he's bringing cheese pizza to his brothers. I don't know why no one's capitalized on this, and there's not a pizza place called David's, because he's the first pizza delivery guy. And so his dad says, go bring pizza to your brothers and let me know how they're doing. And bring a report back and forth with this stupid pizza. 1 Samuel 17, verses 17 through 20. One day Jesse said to David, take this basket of roasted grain, these 10 loaves of bread, and carry them quickly to your brothers. Give these 10 cuts of cheese to their captain. See how your brothers are getting along. Bring back a report on how they're doing. And David's brothers were with Saul and the Israelite army at the Valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. So David left the sheep with another shepherd, and he set out early the next morning with the gifts as Jesse had directed him, and he arrived at the camp just as the Israelite army was leaving for the battlefield with shouts and battle cries. David served faithfully in the lowliest of positions. He met needs that really needed to be met. He used them with skills that he had. He used what he had. It wasn't amazing, but he did what he could. But his heart was a heart to serve. Because when you serve like that, it's a sacrifice. And that sacrifice can be understood as love. And David got that. And when we're serving in our world, when we're serving one another, we need to serve with the same kind of heart that David had, because it's the example that's being given to us here. Serving is not about the status that you have. It's not about your position, but it's about the need that's there. When we serve for a very particular reason, for a need that is there. We might think that we're all this and all that. Or we might think, well, because of my position here, I can't really serve in this area. And Jesus said, you call me Lord and teacher. And that's right. But I've come to serve. And you need to do this to one another, to serve one another in a very real and practical way. But serving is also about giving what you have. And David gave what he had, his time, his resources, his ability to play a harp, whatever it might be that he had, he was willing to give in service. And we too need to be the type of people that give what we have in service. Maybe there's a skill set that you have, a time or resource that you have, a connection that you have, an understanding of something, some wisdom about something, whatever it might be. But that is what we're supposed to do, is we're supposed to serve in this way. So we serve a real need, and we serve with what we have. And the heart condition that we have has got to be in line with what Jesus wants us to do when it comes to serving others. So I want to leave you with just a couple of questions here. It's just for you to answer on your own. Do you serve? And if that is a question that's difficult to answer, you are a work in progress. But that's not a good place to stumble. You should be able to rattle off quickly. Because a follower of Jesus Christ is one that serves. And there should be places you say, yep, I serve here and I serve here. I sacrifice in this way. I do this thing. You have to be serving. And not just serving self, but serving others. It helps us keep a focus. It helps us understand what we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to be about. Because followers of Jesus are called to serve. So if you do serve, how do you serve? And who do you serve? We don't always like to serve certain people. Sometimes we have prejudices against various things. Maybe it's prejudices about race or religion. Maybe someone's political position, their temperament, their morality. But God calls us to serve whoever he puts in our path. A few weeks ago, we talked about the Good Samaritan, right? Came across his arch enemy, the Jew, and he served him. Because that's who God put in his path that day. And it always seems like God's more interested in us serving the ones that we don't want to serve than the ones that we are no problem serving. Who do we serve? So let me get as practical as I can here as I wrap up. We need to be serving each and every one of us. And the first place that the scriptures encourage us to serve is within the church. because the church is the body of Christ, and each one of us has been given a gift, and it's to be used for the sake of the work of the church. And so we need to serve in the church. You can serve in other areas too, but if you're not serving in the church in some way where you're giving of your skill set, your things that you have, and meeting those needs within the church, that's missing the mark. And it's okay that we're all on different parts of the journey, but I just want you to know that as the scriptures teach and what Jesus is calling us to do, and as your pastor, I'm imploring you to understand, is that we have to be serving in the church first. And so if that's not happening, we want to open some doors for you for that, to help you understand where that might be and how that might be. It doesn't mean you have to give 60 hours of your week to the church, but there should be service in the church in some way. Not because the church needs it, but because God calls you to serve. So that's first. Second thing is that you need to be serving those that God calls you to serve, not those that you want to serve. Maybe those will both be two and the same. That's great. But you need to be serving those that God asks you to serve. And sometimes those are tough areas to serve. But probably why they're tough is because they're a place that needs a tangible expression of God's love, and he's chosen you to do that. So don't knock that, don't avoid that, but tap into those places where he has called you to serve, the people that he's called you to serve. And the last thing that I'll say with practicality to service here is that when we serve, our service should be with the skills that we have. And I have heard too many people tell me, for example, like I've had teachers that have said, well, I teach all week, so I don't want to teach in the church at all. And I get that, like it's been a long week, but that's kind of your skill set. And so there should be some, like the thing you're the best at, those are things we should be doing in the church. So maybe it's finding a way that revitalizes that or rejuvenates you in some way or excites you about that. Or maybe it's support of teachers if you're a teacher, something, you know. I mean, maybe you crunch books. We got book crunching that we could use help with, you know. Or I don't know what your skill set is, but I've got to think your service has something to do with your skill set. I mean, unless you're in a job, you're like, I completely hate my job. Well, then let us help you find what you like to do and then quit that job and find that work too. But we should be in the church serving in these areas of passion for us and the areas of skill that we have. You're a professional, that can be used in the church. Blue collar worker can be used in the church. Stay at home parent can still, there's skill sets there, can be used in the church. Not because the church needs it, because God calls us to serve in the church, and he says each one of us has a responsibility, and the body works when the whole body comes together. But if, like, part of your body decided not to work today, like you just said, okay, no longer right leg, you don't get one, you're going to look weird coming out of here. And if you need to help someone, you're one leg less able to help, and that could be really detrimental in places that God calls you to serve. And God has called the church to be his hands and feet to the world, and not all of our fingers and toes and arms and legs have shown up. And we're just waiting and hoping that you will see the value of service, not because the church needs you, but because Jesus has called us to serve, and what will he do with that service? Next steps. One of the things that Jesse offers is something called Strength Finders. And what Strength Finders is, I'm just going to give you the short and skinny of it, helps you figure out where your best skill sets are, where your passions are to serve. It's a fun little seminar that's done and a little, like, you know, feels like a personality test, but a little test that you take afterward, spits out some stuff, and when you're all said and done, you're like, dang, that's me. Like, yeah, those are things I'm excited about. And then Jesse will work very closely to help you find the places that you're passionate about and how to make that kind of become a reality here at Hillcrest. The second thing that you could do, aside from taking the Strength Finder, which is in October, right? October 21st. So it's still a little ways off. You'll see a sign up for it. We'll have Jesse come up here and, you know, threaten all of you to take it. But the other thing you can do, regardless of the Strength Finder thing, is you could just start serving. So, you know, all the red tape gone, you're at full access to serve. You just have to let us know how you want to serve, and if you don't know, we'll sit down and try and help you figure it out. So at the end of service, I've got some sheets up here that you can put your name and email down, and then it says, what do you do in life? Like, are you a teacher? Are you this? Are you that? You know, whatever it is. That might have something to do with it. And then secondly, it just says, where would you like to serve? Like, what kind of things do you like? Maybe you're You know, maybe you're like, I like to work with finances. I do that, so maybe I could help with finances. Or I'm a teacher. Maybe I can help somewhere in teaching in some way. Or maybe, you know, I've got time. I like people. I could usher. I could greet. I could do something like that. Maybe I'm a handyman. I can fix stuff. Or a handy woman, and I'd like to be a part of the facility group. And every once in a while, I'll be able to come in here and, you know, swing a hammer around or turn a screwdriver or whatever it might be. You know, I don't know. I get off work late at night. I don't really know what I could do. I'm working all day long. Maybe you could be the person that comes by here just to make sure the doors are locked up every night. It's a huge need that we have around here because doors get unlocked. That could be your act of service. We had a group that was here over the weekend. We love to have this facility used for everybody we possibly can. If you go into that Family Life Center, that group must have spilled red punch or something 20 times on that carpet. The entire carpet needs to be shampooed. I don't know who's going to do it. And not only that, but it smells like goat in there. And I don't know, maybe you've got a skill set on how to get goat out of the air, but goat and red carpet stains. Larry Mattson is thinking right now, he's like, goat, I got something for goat. He sells cleaning chemicals, if you don't know. I saw you were like, you were off in like your product line. I love Larry. But he taught Jesse how to serve. Heritage passed down. It's up to you. Your choice. We're going to close our service with the Hillcrest Dance Group. They're actually called DFG, Dancers for God. So as they come up and they get into position, we're going to close in our prayer and also just again to remind you that as you leave service today, the Gideons are going to be at the back doors and taking a collection. And so you can write a check out to the Gideons. You can just drop cash in there. They'll take that with them today. But dollar for dollar, what you give to Gideons goes to Bibles that are placed. And an incredible ministry on getting Bibles in the hands of people that need those. And so they'll be there as we dismiss to go ahead and head out. So please do that if you feel called to do that. But let me pray for us, and then I'll turn it over to Heidi and the DFG. Father God, we thank you for this day and your love for us and the call that you've given us to serve, but Lord, the example that you have given us, that you served and sacrificed everything for our sake. And so, Lord, help us to see the need to serve in the church, to be a part of bringing your message of hope and your good news to the world around us, to be your hands and feet, and to love others the way you have loved us, and to love others the way we are so good at loving ourselves.